Somebody had a question about is it oversimplifying to think that self only has three tactics, like, dislike, and who cares? That's just, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Right? So we'll be talking more about Buddhism and self and the three poisons over the next couple of days. But I want to keep to the process, okay? So we're starting topographically, very real world, just using the tools of mindfulness to observe yourself, right? Whatever you call it, we're not even defining it, whatever you call yourself. And in the last 24 hours, since yesterday's talk, there has been a lot of practice, a lot of meditation, discussion, and people, I think, are kind of getting a sense of there's something going on in there, right? And many people, you know, it's not as if we haven't known it, right? But the extent, the pervasiveness of the I, me, mine, and of this sense of self and separate selfness, I think people are many people are quite taken aback. Just how, again, how it really perfumes, contaminates, whatever you want to call it, or pervades just our constant experience, right? We don't even begin to understand the depth of the self-filter that is multiple self-filters that are standing between us and direct experience. And I know many of you have told me in our interviews how helpful you find the kind of dialogue and interaction. Because again, like we all know, we are very good at seeing other people's selfness, aren't we? We are experts with other people. Seeing all their foibles and shortcomings and their self-centeredness and their self-attack, right? But we are often blind to our own. And again, that is because we are so completely, to one degree or the other, some more or less, identified with ourself in all its endless manifestations. Is that clear? So it is a very difficult task. It is an exercise in really mindfulness. Mindfulness meaning to really be the objective experiencer of your mental experience, to see clearly what's going on. So again, I think dialogue is helpful because oftentimes we are going, oh, when somebody shares, you go, oh, you know, kind of a me too, right? Me too, me too, me too. And so that's helpful because I think we're realizing the commonality of it. The storyline may be different, but the I, me, mine, how it attaches to everything, is quite pernicious. Somebody in one of the groups, actually it was Mark, if I can use your name, he brought up a very interesting point. Mark has been involved very sincerely with the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition for a couple of thousand years, right? I mean, at least. You know, been on many retreats. He's been on retreats with me. It's not as if he hadn't heard about non-self, but he's been quite blown away in this retreat to kind of get it in that way. And what I said to him, and this is something I've noticed in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, which is a tradition I practice in, is I think that's a whole. It is there. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh talks about non-self. He always talks about non-self, right? He has books about non-self, you know, and he's always talking. But he talks about it in terms of interbeing, right? He talks about it, you know, the cloud and the water in the flower, in the pet, you know, all. He talks about, because I think that, I mean, I remember talking about it years ago, but I think it is cultural. It is Vietnamese culture, and it's also, and you know, the Tibetans have had the same trouble. You probably have read, you know, when the Dalai Lama, you know, people started first talking about the Westerners, you know, this is like 30 years ago, having self-esteem issues. He's like, he had to ask his translator, what are they talking about? You know, self-esteem issues. Same way with inner child, you know, all these kind of things that we are so conversant with, they're going like, what are they talking about? You know? And I think that is because even though these are wonderful teachers and in certain ways they get us, I think they've missed one significant piece that we know, that we are a culture of ego and self, right? Western psychology is ego psychology. It's ego-based psychology. Our educational system, our parenting is all focused on what? Self, right? Right? My kid is an honor student, that, right? I mean, we're always, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's all about self. It's all about, you know, building up self-esteem, right? So we are a culture that right from the beginning puts incredible focus on self and ego, which other cultures don't. Actually, other cultures do the opposite. In Japanese culture, I know it's probably changing, traditionally, you don't stand out. Ooh, if your child stands out, you're embarrassed. If you never point out their good qualities or something, because it would just build up their ego. So it's a, you know, and I would imagine Vietnamese, either Confucian cultures, these are cultures where, you know, fitting in, being part of the whole, you know, is really the ethos. So, you know, we're the opposite as a culture. And so that's why, and I was telling Mark that I had a conversation with the senior monastics, a Western, you know, what he died, you know, he was the, used to be the Catholic priest, wonderful brother, you know, just a light bulb. And he said to me, this is a number of years ago, he said, you know, as he knew I was a Dharma teacher down here, he said, do you ever, you know, talk about ego and self? And I said to him, you know, I talk about it all the time, you know, and we got into the same kind of conversation, how Thay really doesn't talk about it. And again, I think it's not that he doesn't get it, he just doesn't get how deeply, it's a cultural thing. Is that clear? And I think in other Asian teachers, you hear a lot about emptiness, you hear a lot about non-self, you know what I mean? But you don't kind of hear it in the way that we get it, the way we feel it. Is that clear? So that's what I was saying to Mark, and yeah, I can understand it. You know, I guess for me, you know, being a therapist, you know, I was kind of like, I mean, I got it. You know, I was like, I could see what was going on with people. And therefore, when I started to teach Dharma, you know, I could see it there too. You know, I could realize, oh, you know, a lot of these people are suffering from diseases of self. You know, that's our disease. We have diseases of self. Okay? I think we're in a good place. So let's continue the journey. Not jumping too deep yet. Again, you know, I think, you know, there are people in this room, people in our Sangha, people in the world who, you know, who practice a lot of Buddhism, love the deeper stuff, love Shantideva, love the Bodhisattva way, love the wisdom path, love the deep teachings of emptiness. And yet still, in the world of self, are still very reactive. Okay, and I think that's important that we not be ashamed or embarrassed, you know, by that fact. I think, again, you know, we talked, a number of people in their sharing talked about their, you know, how often they show up in the world in a self-conscious way, you know, wanting to, you know, present themselves in a certain way, right? And we can talk more about that. But I think people do that in the Dharma way too. They want to present themselves, you know, I'm a serious student, you know, I go for the big stuff, I go for the deep stuff, you know, which is good. That's a good aspiration, right? But, you know, we got to take care of our wounds, you know, because if you don't, you will find you may, you know, this may be your third go around for the deconstruction of the myth of self, and you may have been in 5 Shantideva Bodhisattva Way intensives, and yet still, you're, you know, as Robbie shared with us very, very kindly, that still, out of nowhere, there it is. There she is again, you know. And you know, that shows us that, you know, at the same time we are moving along, we have to make sure that these other parts of us, and we'll talk what that really is about, are moving along too, you know. And we can't be, I mean, I think I heard that from some people already in the retreat. It used to be, I remember when I was a therapist, you know, people come to me depressed, anxious, and I'd, you know, interview them and kind of listen to them. And after a session or two, I'd say, you know, it's still like, you know, I still think this is your, you know, inner child, childhood trauma issues. And they go, no. You know, I mean, they would be so frustrated, right? No. I worked on those issues for years in therapy, you know? You know, no, I don't want to have to deal with this stuff again. Well, you know, I don't want to have to deal with it either, but... You know, you know what I mean? But here we are, right? You see me? But here we are. And so let's deal with it. And let's deal with it in a way this time that we don't move on before we really have really transformed, healed and transformed. Is that clear? And I think, again, you know, if I'm speaking to any of you and or if I'm speaking to all of us, you know, we need to acknowledge that in a very forthright way. And again, doing the kind of exercises that we're doing in the intensive, we're doing in the retreat, are very helpful. I mean, a number of people have also said, you know, it's been very helpful for me just to have one retreat that's just on the self, because usually the, you know, it's part of a bigger matrix of Dharma, right? But just to kind of be able to just the I, me, mine, the self, and just that's the only thing I'm watching. That's the only thing I'm really mindful of. Is very beneficial, right? And I think it is. Now again, in a certain way, it is the most beneficial. Because the issue of the perception of sentient beings as perceiving themselves as a separate self, and it, you know, that has a self-existent quality, that is permanent over time, is the fundamental delusion from which everything else comes. Right. So, to spend time really looking into the issue of self, I think you will get great mileage. Because if you look, as I said yesterday, if you look at all your issues, everybody know, just for a minute, just take a time and think about your issues. Right? Some people may need a couple hours for this one. but just do the top ones, okay? The ones that are most up. But I think it's funny because you might think, I mean, if you think of all the issues you've had in your life, right? It's quite a list, isn't it? The issues you're dealing with, the issues you're working through, the issues, right? You know, personal issues, interpersonal issues, emotional issues, my anger, issue with my fear, issue with anxiety, issue with my sadness, issue, you know what I mean? Issues with this, issues with that. Everybody know what I'm talking about? What is this? The common theme to all those myriad issues are what? Me. Right? Me. The central actor in the drama of our life is me. It's all about what's happening to me. And let me say, if you want to understand very simply what it's about, that you can see is self at war with reality. That's the battle you are fighting every day, if not moment to moment. Is that clear? Right? Reality is what we are, what is happening. Right? That's all it is. Right? What's happening out there in the river today, that's all what's happening. That's reality. Right? But self does not accept reality. Right? It only believes in one reality, its reality. And its reality is made up of endless, endless likes and dislikes, preferences, ideas, identities, right? Endless. So, in the face of reality, what does self do? What? It endlessly controls and manipulates. Right? Rather than doing this, the most simple, obvious, easiest stance in terms of life, which is total openness and acceptance. Of what? Of reality. I mean, whether you like reality or don't like reality, it's still reality. Right? You know, you may like this person or don't like this person, they still are who they are. I mean, it doesn't change them at all. Right? You may like the way the world is going, you may hate the way the world is going. That is the way the world's going. That's reality. Right? In the face of reality, self declares war. Now, everybody here is different. Some people, you know, they're always at it. Some people a little more laid back. But it's really it's more or less for most the same. It is that interface with the self and reality and the inability of self to accept reality as it is, from which suffering, emotional afflictions arise. Is that clear? I mean, this is simple, easy to say, right? But it's really as simple as that. People are who they are. People are doing what they're doing. Is that true? As many people have pointed out, we are chronically judging, evaluating, comparing that. And what's our criteria? Myself. And all my ideas and values and blah, 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 and preferences and likes and dislikes, et cetera, that I think are what? Right or true. So we don't even experience reality ever. All we're ever experiencing is the filters that we self has erected. You know, why do we have to learn mindful communication? Right? Anybody ever heard that word? What do we practice between 4:30 and 5:30 every day? What's it called? Right. Why do we have to do things like that? Because it's so damn hard for us to what? To listen to another human being, say what they're saying, let them finish their sentences, not say anything, and just listen without judging, without interpreting, without projecting, without right? Wow, is that hard? Right? We got to get everybody in a circle and get somebody to run it with a bell, you know, and give them rules. You just listen. You didn't realize that what it's about, did you? Deep. Right? So we can learn the simple thing of what? Being present to another human being when they speak, and we just listen to them. We just offer them. If we are really listening, we just offer them our presence. We accept them. They can say whatever they want, right? You know, why do we have to have these kinds of... Because so hard for us, right? We have to enforce silent rules. No, no crosstalk. Right? Because we're all wanting to what? What? Respond. Help them. Guide them. Give them some support. Right? Can you see? We just can't accept, yeah. This is their truth. This is what they're feeling. Maybe they're happy. Maybe they're sad. Maybe life is easy. Maybe they're struggling. You know, that's all. So what? I mean, not so what, like indifferent, but that's reality. It's not permanent. It's not so, they're just sharing their reality. But in the face of reality, self, you know, wants to do something. Why? Because of its conditioning. But primarily, you know, many people who think, oh, I'm just the most, I just want to go out there and give them a hug. Right? You know what we want to do? Just want to give them a hug. You know why you want to give them a hug? Because you're uncomfortable in the face of their suffering. See? It's your own uncomfortability. Right? You know, just to be in the presence of somebody who's sad or angry. Ooh, I don't want to get anybody angry here. Right? Why not? Why don't we want to get anybody angry? Why do we mouse around a lot? Ooh, I don't want to get them angry. Why? It's uncomfortable. Ooh, right? See? Self is uncomfortable. In self's agenda for the world, are people supposed to be angry at Dan? No, you see? Can you see? And that's all. And Dan thinks that's normal, right? But you see? But it's really why? It's because of your conditioning, you know, et cetera, how your self was formed, somehow anger was dangerous. Anger was something, you know, we could, lots of reasons. But we end up in a kind of a, you know, don't want to get anybody angry, right? And we think that's like a virtuous thing, you see, right? Or how about this one? Ooh, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, right? I'm a good person. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Why not? Why not? They won't like me anymore. They won't like me anymore. Or that's not the way I perceive myself.
Or I don't want to watch them suffer.
Or I'm not comfortable, right? You see, but again, that's our own. Yeah, it makes me uncomfortable. But hurt feelings are something that's going on inside somebody. And you know why they're hurt? Because of their ego. You see? It's just ego. Because in their world, what? Well, no. It's they're hurt because nobody's supposed to do that or say that to me. You see, hurt is a response to somebody saying, what? The truth. I mean, a lot of people get hurt because you say no to them. Right? It's like, I mean, that's the world. Right? Sometimes the world says yes, sometimes the world says no, doesn't it? I mean, is this true or not? Or have I been living in some kind of altered universe? Right? I mean, You know, I've had to learn, it's been painful to deal with the fact that not everybody does things I ask them to do. Not everybody shows up in the way I want them to. I have children. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Right? You know. I mean, do you see, that's our world. We are so ego-centered in let's say America, I don't know other cultures, that we just baby the ego. You see? Rather than going, let's look into this. In Dharma, we say, let's look into this. You know, what's really going on here? But we're so, it's like we pussyfoot around the ego. Don't want to want to get it angry. Don't want to get it hurt. Don't want to disappoint it. Right? But why not? I mean, has anybody here ever been disappointed? You laugh because why? Because of course. I mean, because in reality, things don't always turn out the way we want. Right? People don't always treat us the way we want. Right? Not everybody who's supposed to on my list calls me on my birthday. Unbelievable. I'm making that one up, but I know somebody who's like that. But I mean, can you see? I mean, we and these are petty little things, but can you see? You know, whoa! I kind of bowed to somebody this morning. They didn't bow back to me. Ooh. Right? It hurts. Disappointed. Not noticed. Right? All of that. I mean, I could be up here for days. Telling you stories about what? About self. About a self that's at war with reality. I'm just giving you the kind of quick and dirty, right? I mean, this is going right to the heart. Self at war with reality. And because it doesn't want to accept and be open to reality, all its denials, all its repressions, all its aggressions, all its manipulations, all its protectives, right? We got into a thing with Gary this morning. Gary said to me, what did you say to me? Something about protecting. So Gary, I'm just repeating this. Yeah, I won't. So you want to protect yourself from insecurity feelings. So when you have these things called insecurity feelings, how do they feel? Well, I would say that's a little backwards. So when you perceive that someone is treating you or talking to you or perceiving you in a way that is less than you want them to, yes. You hear the I? Less than you want them to, right? You see? Already reality is occurring. Reality is what? Can we control what everybody thinks about us? Can we, Mark? No. And yet what? As Mark was saying this morning, when he comes in the room and scans, we're trying to figure out how to, you know, how can I proceed here and not look like a total jerk? Right? I mean, it's ridiculous. Because I know Mark, he's anybody but a total jerk. And yet inside, there's this little self going, got to figure this one out. Because the last thing in the world I want to do is be perceived as less than. Not the sharpest tack in the pack. Not the brightest Dharma student. Not the most developed. Not the most insightful. Whew. Can you see that? And so we carry that burden. Right? Carry that burden, right? And it's all imagination. None of it's real. It's all just our imagination, right? But not only because you carry that, those fears around and those beliefs about yourself around, you know, all about self, then you have to work hard to control and manipulate. And everybody in here, to one degree or another, spends a lot of time in life controlling and manipulating. Right? So, you know, you work very hard to do things right. Right? Whew, Gary, gotta working very hard to get this right. So people will what? Like me, think you're smart, think you're competent, right? I mean, a lot of work, right? Yeah. And then if something happens where you're a little not sure whether that's going to work, then you go, you see, that's your control strategy. Control everything to make it work. But if that's beginning to break down, then you go into protect, right? Defend. And now it's time to defend the self, which really doesn't exist, by the way. But yet in our imagination, there's something to defend. From what? From somebody perceiving them in a way they don't want, or somebody saying something to them that we don't want them to say. Right? Yeah, I mean, and I'm not, it's not like I'm a genius. It's like, this is the dynamic, right? You know, this is the war, right? Gary has a self that has been cultivated by causes and conditions, so it's showing up in the moment the way it does with all its, right? And it's just working it, right? And it's controlling whenever it can. It's manipulating the environment whatever it can so it feels safe and it gets its needs met. And then if it doesn't, it pulls back into protective mode. Oh, don't say it. Don't think it, right? Because we think if they say it or think it, we'll just die. It'll be devastating, right? Isn't that what we think? I mean, you know, at some level, it seems like such a big deal to be found out, right? To be found out that I'm not who I think I should be, or I'm not who I think other people think I should be. I mean, it's like, I mean, I even get lost in it. It's so convoluted, and yet it is so real and painful, and it takes so much work. Is everybody clear? You know, and again, everybody is different, right? We all have our different backgrounds, and our, you know, because of that, our self-identities, some, you know, are stronger or weaker, or, you know what I mean? But bottom line, this, you know, the reason you think I'm so insightful up here is just because I'm talking about self. And obviously, since I'm a total egocentric, I have a lot of experience in observing how self operates. Right? I want to have a lot of dialogue. So in our intensive and in past intensives and past retreats, I always quote Zen Master Dogen, the great, great seminal mind of Japanese Buddhism, Japanese Zen, Zen Master Dogen, where he said, the study of Buddhism is the study of self. Wow, when I first read that, I went, wow, right? Because I thought the study of Buddhism was the study of Buddhism, right? You studied Buddhism, you studied the Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, the Three Marks of Existence, the Eight Levels of Consciousness, the Five Skandhas, right? You study all the teachings of Buddhism. And all of a sudden I saw this quote, the study of Buddhism is the study of self. Now luckily I read that years ago, and I went, wow, there it is. Right? This is the study of Buddhism. You want to know everything about suffering, the cause of suffering, and suddenly study the, and his second line, so study of Buddhism is the study of self. To study the self is to forget the self. Oh, I thought that was profound, right? Because we think to forget the self, I got to kind of drop it off somewhere. I got to get beyond it. I got to kind of find some alternative non-self universe that I can live in. Right? Isn't that what we think? Yeah. And here's Zen Master, the great Zen Master going, the study of Buddhism is the study of self, and when you study the self, you will end up at the non-self. Okay? I mean, that's so, And then he goes on to say, study yourself, and forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. We can talk more about that later. I mean, that's your interbeing. All right? Tai, because of, I think, his own enlightenment, he kind of starts there. You see? And I don't think he realizes we're back here. You see? He's in the enlightenment of by the 10,000 things. That's the third verse. You know, most of us, we got to hear the first verse, you see, to get there. Anything else, Gary, since we've... I mean, is that clear? Yeah, no, Gary, no. You see, that's it. There's your self. It's like, help me. I'm little. I'm confused. I'm not very smart or competent. Help me. You see? You see how he right away jumps in like that? Yeah, but see, no, Gary, you've been practicing Dharma for years. I know you know what to do. Once you got the roadmap, we're giving you the roadmap. What do you got to do? Yeah, mindfulness, concentration, insight, healing. I mean, it's all the stuff you know. You know, now that I know that this chronic thoughts, feeling, perception, or simply this voice inside me, the voice of self, is the cause of my suffering. It is always giving me wrong advice. Until I've transformed it and it's a wholesome self. Huh? Okay, take refuge. Yeah, well, yeah, but you see, what you just said is the problem. Look how you said that. This monster ego, right? No wonder you're looking for, you know, significant weapons in the battle with monster ego, right? Oh, now I understand you better. So you're thinking, Fred... No, you don't get it, Fred. This ego is a monster. And everything you've taught so far, you know, these are like kitchen tools, you know? I mean, you know, I need pneumatic. You know, I need power tools for this one. Oh, now I understand what you're looking for. You know, Gary has a background in construction. You're saying, yeah, this is not a hammer and saw kind of thing, Fred. This is like, right? Okay. It might be done with hand tools. What if it's not a monster, Gary? See, what if it doesn't exist as a monster? It's not a monster. That's our problem. We think self is a monster. We'll be looking into, actually, what self is. But you think it's a monster. If we think it's a monster, then we think what? Well, something is undermining you, but we have to be careful with words, you see. Yeah, something's sabotaging you in this life. But you called it a monster. See, monsters are big, powerful, right? Scary, right? And to slay a monster, to tame a monster, I mean, takes incredible strength, you see? Chatter, 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 chatter. Could be just a mouse. Chatter, chatter, chatter.
Yeah, so I've blown it up.
Yes. Right. And many of us have. Right. Many of us have. Because Because in our Western psychology and in our delusion, our fundamental delusion is just what you said, Gary. We think the self exists. But it doesn't exist. That is why liberating from it is not so hard. It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. Have you ever seen your ego? Why not? But, all right, there you go. Gary says he gives up, he's just going to follow the instructions. Right. It's, you know, I mean, if it was a monster, you'd see it. I mean, the monsters are big. Right? Yeah. Yeah, what does it look like? Gary says he sees it. I'm just... Yeah, what does it look like? So you think that, so you think there's an ego that has a control on some, there's an ego which is a thing which has control on something that exists called you. Okay. We'll remember that one. Okay, that's good. So there's a thing called ego that has taken over you and runs the show. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've created it, which are, you know, which you have, why don't you just uncreate it? Why don't you just do it?
Can't answer that question because in that form, it seems like I just let go of everything.
Anybody old enough to remember Groucho Marx? You remember with that thing would come down? No, that. What? What was that? It was the duck or something. Gary, you said it. That's the, what did you see? You see what Gary just said? What do you mean, Fred? I'm supposed to let go of everything? Yes, Gary. That's the teaching. Have you ever chanted the verses on faith, on trust in mind? You ever chanted the Heart Sutra? What do you think that's saying, Gary? Yeah, there it is. I mean, if you want to be free, you see? If you don't want to be free, you don't have to. If you want to, you know, I mean, most people... See, Buddhism is very interesting, you know. I mean, the word selfless is really known, you know, in most religions, right? I mean, we're in a Franciscan center, right? I mean, most religions, selfless, being selfless, less self is what's taught, right? The only difference with Buddhism is the Buddha taught that it's not about reducing this self so it's a nicer, kinder, more compassionate self, you know, or more altruistic self. The Buddha actually taught that self, it doesn't really exist in any real way. So it takes it to a depth, you know, that is not readily apparent. Okay? And yeah, so that was very, you know, but you see, what you just did, Gary, was really also, you're very helpful to us today. You went, what am I, and people couldn't see it, he went, what am I supposed to do? Let go of everything? See, and if the answer to that is yes, the doing, Gary, is not like a one-time epiphany that just blows the whole thing up. You see, it's like once you get that's what you need to do, everything is what is arising moment to moment. That's everything. There's no thing called everything. Everything is just this, right? So in this moment, whatever is happening, can I let go of all my preconceptions, all my ideas, all blah, 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 and just be present? Totally empty, open, present. Fearless. Showing up. See, that's all you got to do. You know, one moment at a time. That's all. See, that's easy. You know, slaying monsters and the dragon of ego, that's hard. Letting go of everything, you know, that sounds like impossible, doesn't it? But it's just in this moment, you see, in this moment, when Gary's kind of doing a little role rehearsal because he's about to have an interview with Fred and he wants to make sure, you know, are you willing to let go of that? Mindfulness will reveal what you're doing.
I've given a lot of strength.
Yeah, I can. Well, I can hear that. I mean, that's why I pointed out to you when you use the word. I mean, we have to listen to our language. We talk that way, right? Yeah. We reify self, and we've given it power. Can you see that? You know, no one else has. We've given it power. I mean. And then we'll get to all the questions, okay? Or the comments. What, you know, like let's say you're a, what are you? You know, what are those things, you know, mosaics, you know how you, they're like little pieces of tile and they, right? Okay. So, you know, you may have a lot of broken tile, right? You know, laying around. And you say, well, I think I'll just use all that tile and make a mosaic patio. Is that how that works? Okay. You see, but what you're doing, your choice is already circumscribed by the tiles that are laying around, right? It's not like you have the total infinity of every tile in the world to make your choices. You're the ones that are kind of laying around, right? That's what you're making. You see, that's the way self is created, right? There were things laying around, such as your family of origin, right? And who they were, and who the family was, and the way you were treated, and the way you weren't treated, and your own stuff, and your, you know, and the schoolyard stuff, and you know what I mean? All this experience, it just laying around. See, and we don't realize that we have this infinite capacity of creation, right? We only know, oh, it's like, you know, these are the pieces I got to put myself together with, you see? And so you put yourself together unconsciously just with the stuff that was around in your family of origin, in your relationships, in your, you know, in the very narrowness of your experience. Those were your choices. Right? It's like having a toolbox with like six tools. Right? And you never realize, you know, there are 150 other tools out there. Right? So you're always working with these six tools and you're doing your best. But for a lot of jobs, it's really hard. Right? Right? But that's all you know. All of a sudden, somebody comes along and says, Gary, let me show you this tool catalog. And Gary goes, wow. God, if I only had one of those for the last 30 years, you know? An electric saw. Wow. Right? A pneumatic hammer. Wow. Skill saw. You know, you may be like, you'd be going, wow, have I been doing it the hard way? Okay? Yeah, so again, we need this conceptual kind of talk and ideas so we really understand it. So we have a countervailing energy to our conditioning, which seems so solid and real. You're not the only one. We all think we're real. Solid, permanent. We'll talk about that. But okay. Thank you, Gary. We had some people over here, and then we had some people over here. I think, Reed, you had your hand up? Yeah.
It's interesting because 5 minutes ago I was waving my hand because it was hung up on something.
Uh-huh.
And 5 minutes later it's not so bad.
There you go. So Reed says, I'm doing this because this is being, recorded, and I've gotten some feedback that if I don't kind of repeat the question, people won't know what I'm responding to. So Reed said,
okay, then I can remember the question.
There. So Reed says, hey, Fred, I really raised my hand 5 minutes ago because I had something that was really important I had to ask or say, and now I don't know what it is. I mean, that's so wonderful. Reed, you know all the issues that you've had in life, all the stuff on a day-to-day, but you know that you know the irritations, the frustrations, you know what I mean? You know that? Remember all those? You really can't remember them now, can you? No, why not? They're gone. Yeah, you see, they're gone. That's this wonderful thing. Things, as soon as they happen, they disappear. Right? So, you know, it's very interesting, right? 5 minutes ago, we had a question we have to have asked. This is important, right? And 5 minutes later, it's like, I can't remember what it was, and you're okay. You know, as if somehow if you'd gotten the answer to that question, it would have been significant. Right, there you go. At some point, Reed, we have enough information. You know? So our questions should really be about things that we don't really understand or something, or a place where we're blocked, you know? Yeah, I kind of get it, sort of like Gary saying, you know, I kind of get it, but I don't see how to apply it, you know? See, those are good questions, right? Because they're liberating. We want to liberate each other. So anyhow, I'll come back to you if it appears again. Oh, okay. All right, Reed. Yeah. Well, we have to. Yeah, we have to be very careful. Yeah. So the question is, well, what about those hardwired kind of stuff? And Reed says, like, security, affection, control. See, that's interesting, the way you said that. They're hardwired into me as if, you know, they are essential, right? Now, I mean, I think there are some things that are essential, aren't they? Isn't like air essential? We can't live without air. We can't live without water. Probably can't live without food. Warmth. Yeah, a certain degree of warmth if there are extremes of weather. Anything else that's really essential just to survive? Sleep. We need sleep. Right? Aren't those essentials? I mean, we would die without them. We would wither without them. But you said security, affection, control. And like, they're essential. For what? What are they essential for, Reed?
Control, I'm not so sure, but I think that piece. But the affection part has got to do with procreation. It's the way the race is.
Oh, sex, you mean? Sex. I don't know. Oh, I forget affection. Oh, yeah. Right. You were confusing me for a second. I mean, affection is nice, but I mean, is it? You know, I mean, the squirrels seem to do well without it. You know, a lot of animals seem to. You know, but anyhow, no. But actually, I'm probably demeaning them. They probably do show affection to each other. That's wrong with me. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, if the species is going to continue, there is that sexual impulse. Yeah. Okay. So that's not essential for survival, but it's essential for the survival of the species, we would say. Okay. All right. I'll give you that one. Any other? All right. Okay. So Right. So it's good to, we would hope, right, that every human being on this planet would have all those, wouldn't we? Right? And we should do our best to make sure that they do. So everybody, can have their basic needs taken care of. But they're really quite basic, aren't they? You know, I don't want to belabor our meals in here, which again, they're making a wonderful effort. But, that's not the basic food that we need to survive, right? I mean, we could have what? What? Oatmeal. There you go. I mean, we could just have oatmeal. Go in there, just oatmeal and bowls. Banana, but that's, but you see what I'm saying? So I think that's good, you see. Because I think we are making ourselves as a species so precariously at the verge of being extinct or obsolete because we have created so many things that we think are necessary to survive. Right. And again, if we... So we have to be careful, you see, because you could have gone on with your list, we have a need for control, and we have a need for this, and we have, and those are kind of higher order things, but are they really necessary? I mean, we know, just in our Buddhist tradition, great meditators, in the Christian tradition, gone off, lived in monasteries, lived in hermits, basically nothing, and seemed to be quite happy, right? So we have to be careful when we say, what is the need? And how much of that are we, again, conditioned to? Is that, Yeah. So good. Thank you, Reed. Other on this side, any other answer, taken care of? Evelyn, you had your... Oh, wow. So again, are we all together on this one? I mean, please, this is, as we know, intellectually, we're fairly intelligent people. We can kind of grasp this. But what we're often missing is implication. So if, this is why many of us, our dharma is only from here up, because we kind of get it. Intellectually, conceptually, we can read it, we can listen to it, we can understand it, we can talk it, but we don't really experience it because these teachings have implications, right, for how we live our life, for how we carry on our inner dialogue inside, right? Major implications. So, again, when I say to you, are you clear? And can you see what the implications of this is for your life? The way you function, the way you live, the way you think. The stories you tell about monsters. How many of us have stories like that? I like to... joke with people who talk about inner child, such as Gary this morning, who said, it's just my inner child, right? And again, I had to say to Gary, don't take this poorly. Gary, is there really a little Gary running around inside you? Gary? Right? And Gary had to say what? No. I mean, these are convenient terms to describe something and maybe give us a process of working with. But, none of us have an inner child running around inside us. And we have to know that. Or else it takes on a reality and identity that becomes permanent. And then you're stuck with it. Right? If ego's a monster, if ego's big, if ego's strong, if ego's powerful, then you're stuck with that. If you think you have a wounded inner child within you, you're stuck with that. You see, I may have woundings on my body, but I know they're just woundings in my body and they can be healed. They're not permanent. They're not fixed. Right? So we have to be careful we don't talk about our psyche or mind as if it's wounded. I mean, we talk that way, but we have to make sure that we understand that these are just words, that there's no wounded psyche. Does anybody look inside there? I mean, anybody who thinks they have a wounded psyche, have you ever looked into your mind and see your wounded psyche? I mean, there are a number of people in here who probably think that about themselves. I'm really a wounded person. Whew. Right? Right? And I know what you're talking about. But is it true? Because if it's true, you'd be able to see it. And it would exist over time. It would be there all the time. It wouldn't be in and out. It wouldn't be now and then. It wouldn't be according to causes and conditions that it arises and disappears. If it really existed, it'd be there all the time. Right? Mm-hmm. This inner child that's not an inner child. This inner child that's not an inner child, Gary. Inner child is a convenient way of conceptualizing something. But we do not have an inner child inside us that is wounded. Nobody does. Does I mean, tell me if I'm... All right. I could be totally wrong. All right. Does anybody have a wounded inner child inside them? I mean, don't be embarrassed if you do. So what actually is it, Gary? What are you calling if what? Combination of what we call those memories. So you have memories. When you say conditioning, what does that actually mean? These are words, you see. We're too glib with words. So when you say, my inner child, that's my inner child reacting, right? Like you said this morning. What's actually going on? Oh, hold on. Yeah, but that's, okay. But when you say, it's my inner child, Fred, that's why I'm a little uneasy, right? You're basically talking about that you feel a little anxious, right? And that you have thoughts about how Alma or others are going to perceive you, right? So they're kind of like feelings and perceptions arising. Yes. Okay? Yeah, that's certainly true. But in the moment, all that matters is, in this moment, I am aware that right now I am feeling this. And my mind is thinking this. Isn't that all that's happening? Most of the time. I mean, there can be sometimes visual, imaginative stuff, but that's all that's happening. Right? And if you are mindful of, you are present to that, You're aware of what's arising, and you're taking care of it. Well, you are acknowledging your feeling, but you're not intensifying it. You're just aware of it. You understand what it is. You understand why it's arising. And you correct, unless you're, you know, you've done it enough that you can just, you know, let it go. You just correct the distortion. Self is distorting an experience, right? You're walking in for an interview with your teacher. Something that, you know, is what? Yeah, benign. I mean, it should be a good thing. And yet you feel there's a part of you that's what? Concerned and worried. Right? But even to say a part of you is, again, somewhat imaginative. It's all it's saying is there are thoughts and feelings arising. Right? That are you see, there's the war. You see, there's the war. Right? I mean, the truth is, your body has no problem walking upstairs, going down the hall, going into the room, sitting down. Is that true? Your body doesn't have a problem with it? No. Piece of cake. Yeah. Bell rings, get up, go upstairs, walk down the hall, sit down. Look around. Any drama in that? No drama at all. Thank you. Now, your pure awareness, just awareness, does it have a problem of just... No. So in reality, okay, remember, Buddhism is about how to live in an enlightened way in reality. Okay? Not about creating an altered universe. We're already living in an altered universe. The universe of self. Okay? So that's what's happened. Okay. So your physical body and your pure awareness of just that's just present is quite capable of getting up, going upstairs, walking down the hall, and sitting down. And being present. Right? Everybody see how simple that is? But there's something else going on, isn't there? You see? Right? Yeah. And we need to, the more we are capable of living in mindfulness, and the more that we understand the Buddhist teachings, we know what's going on. Right? There's like, you know, like static on the radio. You know, there's static on the radio. You know, there's static on the call. It's like it's not, you know, I can't hear you. There's static on the line, right? Or sometimes somebody else's voice gets on the line. It used to happen more before. You know, it's like, I can't hear you. There's like another conversation going on. We used to have party line. Remember, all of a sudden you couldn't hear the person, or, you know. It's like that's what's going on. You see, you have party. You have a party line inside you. You see? And you're just trying to go up there and just go to your interview with your teacher. And this is other guy, uh-oh. Right? Alarm. Danger. Got to protect yourself. Got to be on alert. Got to be, right? Can you see? It's just nuts. Right? But it's nuts when you can see it. And you know what it is. You go, that's really crazy. That's irrational. You see? But if you're not mindful, and if you don't know these teachings, it'll seem like it seemed to you. Perfectly normal. You didn't even think about it. You see? We accept the normality of our delusion. Do you remember we talked yesterday about refuge? It's like, we can't even begin to see how screwed up we are. Now again, I understand that many people in this room are high-functioning people who do very well in life. I understand that. But in this very inner way, right? We are not living as we could, right? And so, yeah, so, you know, Gary's a great guy, lives a good life, has a nice family, the whole deal, right? And yet, he still maintains this inner life of self that really has nothing in reality to do with the reality of your life. And yet still, you know, still talking to him. And you're still picking up the line. Don't pick it up anymore. Good. Yeah. 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 No. Just keep trying. I mean, just keep practicing. That's the deal. That's the refuge. We just keep practicing. If we screw up, we just start over. And that's all. It's you know, there's no self here. There's nobody to get angry at. You know, people are so, it's like, there's only one mind. And yet we split into, you know, good self, bad self, you know. Well, I told myself. Hold on, which self is which here? Let me get this straight. Which self are you? I told myself. Oh, then who's that? Who's that self you just told? You know, it's like, it's crazy talk. I mean, I was a mental health professional. This was, people used to come to me for, but we do it all the time, right? Somebody had a... Yes, Mark.
Frank, can you relate this to right speech? So if I say something to Kip, it's just words.
Yeah.
Going to Kip. But, right. But
oh, I see where you're going. So you're saying, Fred, if you take all the filters off, if I can just say whatever I want to Kevin, wow. That's the end of that relationship. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. So that's an extreme, okay? I mean, that's an extreme because you know, see, that Kevin is not a fully enlightened Buddha. He's not totally open to everything, right? That he may take umbrage if you made some cutting remarks or, you know what I'm saying? But if Kevin was over there just very open and spacious without any self-identity and you said, you know, I've always wanted to tell you, Kevin, but I've never... You know, I really never liked you, and you know, and Kevin would just go, oh, okay. You know, I don't like everybody either. You know, that's okay. You see, I mean, we have to be so careful, and we have to practice right speech with each other because we're all at such different levels of development. So right speech is wonderful for a generic way of all people, all different levels, to kind of talk with each other and listen to each other in some kind of meaningful way. That's right speech. But these are, can you see, these are things that teachers have set down for us to help us. You know, it's like I was saying about practicing deep sharing, deep listening. I mean, they're just, because we don't do it, right? Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, but if I said to you, Mark, and you're married, right? Your wife was at the retreat, right? If I said to you, Mark, would you like it if you had a wife that you could say anything to, and she would still accept you and love you? Isn't that a little strange? In an ideal world, that she totally accepted you as you were. And even if it was something really off the wall or off base, she would listen to you, you know, with understanding and love. How would that be? How would you feel if you were with somebody like that? Mark. And how would she feel if she was with somebody like that? How would that make the relationship? Yeah. All right. So good. All right. But isn't that nice for you to know that she's not going to take umbrage and get hurt and get angry and, you know, about every time you say the little things a little inappropriately? How's that feel to be you? Safe? Yeah. So why don't you offer that to her? Yeah. And try Kevin out on the way home. You know, I'm sure his driving is lousy. He's a lousy driver. God knows what else. Right? I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have relationships that are robust? I'm not saying, you know, that we're going out of our way, but like you don't have to, you know, be so careful. You know, so many people you have to be so careful around. You know what I'm talking about? Or maybe we're those kind of people. You know, we have to be so careful. It's not easy to be with people like that. That you have to kind of pick your words, and you always get, you don't want to offend them, you don't want to get them angry, you don't want to hurt them, you know. It's like, whoo, difficult, right? But of course, it's also difficult to be that person, you see, so we can have compassion, because they say, wow, they're just really tightly wound. So the path of non-self, you know, has very practical implications, you see. It's not just, Dharma, deep Dharma. No, it's about how to live life, how to live a good life, and not suffer, and not cause suffering to others. Now again, if Kevin's a very uptight kind of guy who's one of these very, you're not going to kind of just feel free to say whatever you want, right? Because you don't want to hurt him. But I'm saying, wouldn't it be nice if you kind of say, Kevin, why don't you, right? I mean, are you with me? You see, yeah. So I mean, it's not like. I mean, I can see where you were going. I mean, it's like you just pull off all social filters and just kind of, or like Kelly last night, Kelly, can I just eat with my fingers wherever I am? Well, Kelly, I was saying you might want to try, you could try it out here. It's a fairly safe environment. Nobody's supposed to be watching you, okay? If they're judging you, that's their problem. But, when you're out with your boss or anything, I would not recommend it. Or you don't have a boss. But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. So, common sense, right? I mean, we do live with each other. We do live in society. Yeah, but we want to live in society at ease, right? We're wise. With these people, you can be very relaxed and you don't have to kind of watch your words. With these people, Kevin over here, you can say anything you want, right? Good, I think has this been helpful? I mean, it's good. Everybody, yeah. So, we'll start taking it, but, come on, let's get into the Dharma stuff. Let's get into the deep stuff, Let's see. But this is how it really is on the level of reality, right? And we have to be very clear what the experience of self is really like for us, you see? So we can really identify it. And see it, and name it, and know, in our mindfulness, know when it's up. And so we can skillfully, let go, transform. Okay? Yes. Yes. Uh-huh.
Those feelings come up that take us away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the difference? I'm not clear. So the question is, what's the difference between... You mean when you're just reacting impulsively without thought, it's just a reaction, an emotional reaction, a behavioral reaction. We're just... Right, there's
emotional reactions we experience in the emotions
mm-hmm.
that come up
mm-hmm.
in the past, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, we don't always. I mean, we have to realize... We do have an emotional life in the present moment. The problem is for most of us, we don't have that. We have an emotional life that's conditioned by the past. I mean, in the present moment, sad things happen. In the present moment, happy things, things that cause happiness, sad things. In the present moment, we can get irritated. You know what I mean? I mean, there is a full emotional life that's grounded in the present, you see. But for most of us, we don't experience it because our emotional life is so deeply conditioned by all this past emotionality. So we find ourselves, even though it may not be a significant event, you know, reacting with anger to something that's really sort of petty. You know what I'm saying? And you go, you know, that overreaction, whether it's anger or sadness or fear, you know, that's coming from the past. Right? Is that, I mean... Right? But the bottom line is, yeah, we're not going for non-emotionality. We're going for normal emotionality, you know? And I've often said, young children are extreme, but I think they're a model of emotionality, you know? They something sad and they cry, but 5 minutes later they're fine, you know? They get angry, somebody takes their toy, or you know, but 5 minutes later they're over it. You know, I mean, and I think, again, you know, they're children, you know, the kind of things that upset them, hopefully we won't get upset about. Somebody took my rattle, you know. Right? But it's because they're present. They don't hold on to it. They get sad. So it's, again, it's not as if we become flat. But it's that emotionality that is driven by this history. And that's what we need to be mindful of. That's where we got to see reactivity. And you see reactivity because it's always overblown. Right? Or like Gary said, it's just not congruent with what's going on. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's like I'm in this critical mind state. I'm just supposed to be eating lunch. You know, it's like it's not the lunch that's making me irritated, is it? Right? No, actually, lunch is pretty good. Right? What's making me? Well, it's this mind of mine. It's not present to lunch. It's all over the place.
Yeah, you had mentioned reactivity yesterday or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was wondering about that connection to what Gary was saying. It's
reactive. I mean, he's not thinking, well, I'm going up to meet with Fred. I better kind of activate my inner child and get my, you know what I mean? No, it seems, that's why it's so pernicious, because it seems normal. We're so used to it. It's like we, you know, I've often said to people, it's like, if I said, Nina, do you know what you look like right now? Nina would say what?
I'd say, what?
Yeah, well, you have no idea what you look like. Right, because you can't see yourself. Right? I mean, if you want to see yourself, what you look like, you'd have to go and look in the mirror. Otherwise, you only imagine it. But if you want to see it, so mindfulness and concentration give us an attempt at seeing what we don't see. It is the mirror that we can hold up to experience, right? So, again, reactivity means it's reactivity. But, you know, we give it a pass. And if you practice mindfulness deeply, you don't have to give it a pass, because you can see it when it arises. And if you have, you know, some competency in practice, and you know what to do, you can do something even with, you know, deep reactivity. Is that clear? The example I've often used, and we'll close now, is, again, if you're a skillful kayaker, when you hit the rapids, you don't get banged up. You know, you can, you know, you know what you know how to, even in the rapids, right? Even among the rocks, you have skill. You can, right? And you can actually enjoy it, right? But if you don't have any skill, you know, you're in trouble. It's going to be painful. Right? And again, all these teachings are kind of, and reactivity is one of those, you know, that's where things get a little dicey. You know, that's where the even flow of the river changes. Right? Everybody know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and that's a place we got to learn to practice, not give ourselves a pass. Because we give ourselves a pass when we go, oh, that's my reactivity. That's just my inner child. Yeah, okay. But, you know, bring mindfulness, bring awareness. bring understanding, bring compassion to that experience, and you will change it. So good. We will stop now.